So I went to, I think I was, you know, I was very young, I suppose. I can't really tell you how young. I suppose I went to school when I was 5, and I remember my aunt before then. Mm-hmm. And we did have, my mother and father had part of the house with Grandma and Worthy Summers and Auntie in Ordnance Road. They had the bottom, I think, no, the top, we had the bottom. I suppose I must have been about 3 or 4. And I always remember her then because we had a picture book. And this picture book was about this size, and it had a cover on it. And when you opened the cover, it had a capital A, a small A, and a rosy apple. And then further down it had a capital B, a small B, and something else. I can't, but I always remember the apple part and the B there, see. And Auntie used to go through this picture book with us so that we knew our alphabet. Before we went to school, we knew our alphabet.
So she was teaching you from a very early age.
She was, yes. Mm. We could write, we could read, we could tell the time before we went to school at 5. And I went to school at Balham Street School. And one of her teachers, I think she was in the women's suffrage too. I can't remember her name straight off, but it comes to me later on, you know, when I'm perhaps not thinking of anything very important. Mm. Mm. And then Grandma, my sister used to go up, go with Auntie upstairs in their room, and because she was always a studious girl, my aunt, my sister was, you see, but I was a tomboy, proper tomboy I was. And I used to stay down with Grandma. She used to give me a farthing for dusting her machine with all the spokes round, you know. She gave me a farthing for that. And I always remember, because it used to be a lot of dust on the dust, she said, "Grandma, just look at that. How would you like to eat that?" I can always remember, why did she want to eat it? I can always remember it now.
But anyway, why did your aunt take such an interest in you to teach you the alphabet? Was she very close to your mother?
Oh, she was very close to my mother. You see, my father, he wasn't always he ought to have been. I won't go into domestic affairs now, because that could surprise you. I shock you too. But at any rate, my father, my mother, she did, shouldn't I this to be recorded, of course, she left my father twice. Mm. And but of course then that wasn't wrong. As my auntie used to say to my mother, "You mustn't blame Dick, he's got some funny blood in his veins." And of course she said that in front of me. I went to school, she said, "I've got some funny blood in my veins." You know what children are, don't you?
So your mother and her sister stuck together, rather?
My mother and my aunt, they stuck together, because if it hadn't been for my aunt, she supported us when my father left us, because he didn't support us in any way. And my mother went out and earned, you know, and she was a dressmaker. She'd make all my aunt's clothes and everything, you see. And of course, we've always been auntie and mother, even that at the end, till my mother died, always close together. Mm. And if it hadn't been for her, because I don't know that we should ever have pulled through.
So she took an interest in you as your mother's daughter?
I suppose
thing,
so.
Really, partly.
Yes. And of course she was never ashamed of us, because as I say, my mother was a dressmaker and she used to dress us beautifully out of nothing. And my aunt used to get things from her friends, you see, and go to jumble sales and that. And my mother, of course, would tell me people would want to take us out because that we always look so nice. Now,
it was Holy Trinity Church, where?
Barking Road. And that's where we all went as children. I was a very religious child. I used to, in the parlour, we lived in Barking Road, opposite the police station, corner of Balham Street. And on a Sunday, we had an old-fashioned sofa, you know, and old-fashioned chairs, the woman's chair and the father's. And I used to lean on there, and of course, there used to be parlours in those days, you see, with the lino, the antimacassars. And I used to, on Sunday morning, I used to lean on there, sing the litany through over and over again. Funny for a child, wasn't it? But at any rate, I was always very religious until I began to get into my teens. Then something snapped like that, and I had no belief whatever. Mm. Now, would you like to see my grandmother, her mother and father?
I see.
And she nursed her mother till her mother died of cancer. Mm. And
And was that near where you lived then?
Yes, it was all in the east end of London, that way. I can't remember the actual roads where we were. But I think it was round about there.
So she never married and she just looked
she
after
never married.
Her parents?
No, yes. As a matter of fact, her friend said she did have several... In fact, she did have a... They did have a lodger living with them, a Mr... I've forgotten his name now. But, it's gone again. And, he was very old and lived with him for a long time. But he used to say, Emma, the trouble with her was she would never have anything to do with the young men. She had plenty of business. Touch me not. Touch me not. That was her, you see.
Yes. What made her active in the suffrage movement, do you think? Your aunt, that is. Why did she get involved?
Well, I think why she got involved was because they were fighting for women's freedom and equality all the time. Mm. She felt she hadn't had equality. Mm. See, she'd been born into the state she was... That's why I think she'd been born before. She'd been before, you see. And she found herself in these circumstances and she was determined to improve it for other people if she could.
Mm. But she wasn't a campaigner for other causes. It was only that one cause, was it?
She was a campaigner for the miners' cause, the miners, very much for the miners.
What, the eight-hour day, you mean? Or
the
what cause of the miners?
Well, do you know when Lansbury was taking up the miners,
I see.
That part?
Yes.
And getting more money for the men going down and fighting that, ciliacosis of the larynx and all that sort of thing.
Pneumocosis.
Pneumocosis, that's right. And she was... and then, of course, she was always fighting the underdog. The poor people have, I told you, during the dock strike, she thought it was awful, you see, that the starving people who were really the workers, seeing the food laden from the docks and they couldn't have any, and they were starving, she used to say.
So, I'm just trying to think, when was she born? She died in 1974 at the age of 102, did you say?
Yes.
Is that right?
Wait a minute, yes. If it hadn't been for my auntie sometimes, because that, as I told you, my mother left my father twice. Why she ever went back, I don't know. I think she was very fond of him. And I remember when she left him once, we got up at 4 o'clock. That was when I was about 6, 4 o'clock in the morning, after he'd gone out to work, packed the stuff, flew, everything. Well then... What was the mother to do, you see? Thomas, there's one of the sons that was on there.
One of your uncles?
My uncle, yes. They were in the building trade. And his son was in the building trade. And things were very bad again. There again, they were faced with out of work unemployment. So Auntie said she would finance them to go to open a boarding house at Westcliff, as my mother hadn't got anywhere to go with the two children. And so we amalgamated families and we took a house in Ceylon Road off the Hamley Court Road in Westcliff. And it was there that we used to sleep in a tent for kids in the garden with the chest of drawers when we had visitors. And we stayed there and did that for some time. My sister won a scholarship and went to the South End Polytechnic. I went to a school, Ordinary State School, in London Road. We stayed there for some time.
That was the first time your mother left?
I think it was the second.
The second, I think.
And then, of course, my father came down to Westcliff, you see, and started to look round for mother. She fell for him again. And after some considerable time, we moved back to London. But before we moved to London, we had very much excitement. The other part of the family, Thomas's wife now, they moved and went back to London, back to the East End. And we moved to a place, because my mother couldn't move really because my sister was self-aimed polytechnic, you see, she was thinking of an education. And we moved to another house. Well, it was at the time when they first started the first movie, not talking picture. And there was a theatre at the top of Hamley Court Road called the King's Theatre. And they used to have various things. They had the Pygmies there at one time. And then also, too, they were going to do a tableau with children and everything in it. I don't know what it was connected with at all, but anyway, I know we had long muslin dresses down to our feet. We had red, white, and blue sashes. And the evening, it was a paid do, you see, open with a tableau. I always remember my sister had a trumpet, and she stood in the middle of this about 20 children, holding this trumpet up like this. The tableau didn't move, you see. Gold trumpet, holding. I sat down there playing the harp, getting ready for mixed world. The white shoes from under the bed, because the day we had bed balances. And I put the candle down and came down with the shoes and everything. My mother was dressing, so she thought she could smell burning.
Leave him then. I mean,
oh, he was cruel to her.
He knocked her about.
Yeah, yeah.
I see. Because it was quite common in those days.
Oh, yes,
it? I mean,
yes.
Not uncommon.
Yeah.
So how did your aunt get on with your father? Were they at Daggers Drawn, the two of them?
No, they weren't at Daggers Drawn, because she tried to make things as much as she can.
Did she?
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, I think the last time my mother left, she couldn't stand anymore, because we always had everything very nice, considering that we were poor. We had the best of everything. And I remember, I must have been about, that was the second time she left him. We had tables laid up. He used to drink too, you see.
Mm.
And we used to have the table was laid up, cloth and everything beautiful. Two vegetable dishes, the stuff in, mincels, tureen. Everything. You couldn't have had it better if you'd have been, I don't know who. He came home, because keeping the dinner hot, because you see, he'd been out. And he came home, and my mother dished it up, and he sat down. He said, "Where's the mustard?" And my mother said she hadn't made any mustard. Well, he said, "It would be better with a bit of mustard." And he picks up that and he throws a lot under the grate.
Everything on the table.
Everything on the table. Mm. Dinner, gravy, potatoes, batter pudding, Yorkshire pudding, everything.
Mm.
I used to protect my mother, and I always remember even at the age of 3 and 4, do you know what I used to do when he used to attack her? You'll laugh. I used to go behind him and bite his behind. And you see, he'd had me at the back of him, and of course he used to try to do this, you see. It stopped him from hitting her. And he couldn't shake me up, because I would never be shaken up. I was just a little limpet. Ooh, I was, see? Well, I can tell you some stories.
So he did.
I wouldn't like everybody to know, so don't pass it on.
No.
You're doing this sort of thing, and it does give you an insight.
No, it gives you an insight into what women's situation
was
like. Was your mother's situation unusual, do you think, with her husband? Were there quite a lot of wives like
that? I think there are a lot of wives like that, yes. Mm. Yeah. And of course, there are still.
Yes, oh yes.
And that's why I've got no time.
Drunk then, or any time?
Yes, when he'd had a drink or two, you see. Mm. Yes, I think things got above him. And of course, I think too that he felt that he did. I don't quite know the family history on his side, you see, and his father and that lot. There is something in all this, I think, this Irish business, you see. And I think they possibly thought they'd been done out of there. And he hadn't got the... He couldn't take it like... He was the black sheep of their family. He couldn't take it like the others, you see. Mm. The others apparently didn't... You know, they made good. Mm. But he had a chip on his shoulder always about it, you see.
Did he?
Yes, yeah. I think so.
So what effect did this have on you? Were you always defending your mother always?
Oh, yes, and also too, it's a wicked thing to say, I used to pray to God that a tram car would knock him down on the way home and kill him, because I couldn't see any outlet of it. And we were afraid to have anybody home, because he hadn't turned up on a Saturday, you see, got in with his mates. We didn't know whether he was coming, whether he was... It's like an alcoholic, you see. He wasn't an alcoholic, because he hadn't got enough money for that. Mm. But we didn't know whether he was going to turn up and, we should show up, you see. It was in those days, it was for us.
Mm. Well, it would let you down,
yes,
with everybody.
Yes, just as we were earning, going out to business, you see. So that's, I think, that's a lot of where my mother went, you see.
Did he treat you badly, the two girls, badly as well? Or did
my father?
Yes.
Oh, he never raised his hands for us.
No, I see. It was only your mother.
I thought I never knew him. You know what I mean? Because I mean, my mother separated twice from him. Well, I wouldn't know him very much. I was away a long, long while from.
You were away for quite a time.
Quite a time. Well, then when my sister finished at her career at you know, her scholarship was out, we came back and we came to Greenwich. We got a really nice house there. Mother let part of it, Blackheath, in Westcombe Park. Ruthin Road, the number, the name of it. And he was all right then. And then he was working for Redpath and Browns, you see. And
they're boiler makers, are they?
They were boiler makers, iron people, you know. Yes. And steel people, you know. And then what was the next thing? Ben, of course, he went to Cutlass, went there to Cutlass, which was over on the Isle of Dogs. So, of course, he couldn't travel all the way that way from Blackheath. So we landed up, well, we did on one occasion, move from Ruthin Road and had a flat in Greenwich, Tuscan Street. We moved from there and then went over to the Isle of Dogs to live. And that's where we met this thing. Well, what happened there? Did we? Oh, yes. Then we stayed there for some time. And then Auntie said she would try to help us. I went in for an examination, a trade examination, and passed. And I got a scholarship. And I went to Sir John Cass Technical Institute for 2 years. But when the 2 years were up, they sent for my father and said, did he want me to go on? I wanted to be a teacher of domestic science. And he said, yes, he'd like me to go on if I wanted to go on. And the Dr. Kerr, that was the principal, said, well, if you let her go on, the scholarship has ended. You'll have to pay her fees. It will cost £200. Well, £200 in those days was a fortune. My father never got 200 pence, much as you could do to live. See what I mean?
Yeah.
When he was out of work, he was out of work. There was no unemployment pay or anything like that.
Yeah.
So he said, and they said, you must understand, she wouldn't earn till she was 21. So my father said, oh no, can't do that. She had to come home, so home I went. Now Auntie was living with us at the time. She thought that it would be a very good idea if she bought a little house on the mortgage and we rented it. It would give us security of tenure.
She had quite a lot of more money than you did, really, then, as a family.
Oh, yes, she did, yes.
Because she was a school teacher.
Well, she was a school teacher. She earned more then than we did. And she went to, she got this house at, Central Park Road, and we were there some time. It was a very nice house, and it was the last time my father ever attempted to hit my mother. And he was afraid of me. As I grew up, he really was afraid of me. You always remember sitting, we had the French doors, and my mother got, she always got everything very nice, and he got the enamel coffee jug, put a coffee on the table, came down and was going to have our evening meal. I don't know what upset him, but he started. And he stopped up to hit my mother, and I got this coffee pot on my hand. I was pouring out the coffee. That's enough, I said. And he stopped. I said, go on, hit her. Go on, hit her. And he stopped, he looked at me, looked at the coffee pot. Oh, go on, I said. Oh, go on, do hit her, hit her. What, you wanted to hit her? Hit her. Sat down. I never hit my mother after that.
You were big enough then.
I was about 17, yes. When I hear people who've had a distressed childhood, I often think, but for the grace of God, you know, when they're in the dark. But for the grace of God, they might have gone.
Do you think it did any great harm to you, seeing those, you know,
must have done. I know when we were children, we used to scream at the top of our, yes.
But did that make your mother into a suffragette herself or not?
No, my mother was very passive. She wasn't a suffragette.
Well, why not, actually? Because you'd think it would make her...
No, she had as much as she could do to live and bring up her 2 children and look after Auntie. She was always looking after Auntie, you see. And that, again, was a jelly. Because my father used to say, let your sister keep your children, see? Because that... there was a certain amount of jealousy, I suppose. See?
Between him and...
Between him and my auntie, yes. He thought she was possibly taking his place, you see. But, oh yes, I mean, there has been some terrifying times. What do you think when you see all the Sunday dinner go over there and the and you don't know what mine's going to do, and you go and beg by his backside all the time.
So anyway, your mother didn't react by becoming a champion of women's causes.
Well, my mother didn't have any interest in it whatsoever.
No.
I think she thought my auntie was a bit off, you know.
Mm. Well, tell me what your aunt did then. She joined Sylvia Pankhurst's movement then, did she?
Yes, she did.
Do you know what she did? Did she go to meetings once a week?
Oh, yes.
Or that sort of thing?
She used to go to meetings. We used to go to the meetings. I told you my letter, didn't I? And they had a suffragette shop, 32B Romford Road, and that was their headquarters. And Mrs. Pankhurst and Christabel, yes, there was another daughter, Sylvia, wasn't there? Mm. Christabel used to come down, and we used to go to the corner streets and hold meetings, you see. Not that I took much interest in it, I was only 16 at the time, or 15, something like that. But I know I carried a banner, and I know we had this purple, white and green sash on.
Did you? Yeah.
Here, there's the militant.
Did your aunt try and involve you in the movement yourself then? Did she try and, did she say,
no,
well,
we
come
just,
along?
Oh, well, I expect she did, you know, mm-hmm. And of course they had a shop then, because we used to make coconut ice and go to the shop and sell. And the most funny part, I couldn't put this in the letter, but this will amuse you, it was a lock-up shop. It had no outside, no toilets, you see. And of course, you know, everybody's human, they have to have toilets sometimes. We had a pail under the counter. And if anyone who wanted to, of course, relieve themselves, we used to have to lock the door, put up some paper up there, use the pail, and take it out, put it in the gutter outside. But my auntie and I, we had laughed over it after, you know, we used to say, do you know when we used to go to the surf shop? It just shows what you go through and what you do for a cause.
Yeah. But, what did you made the coconut ice at home?
At home?
Did you,
oh, yes,
then you took it
home,
to the shop
took
to
it,
sell?
Took it up, penny a lump.
Yes, I see. Yes.
Yeah.
What
and
else?
It holds a suffragette paper. And anything else in the way that might raise money, you know.
So were you behind the counter in the
yes,
shop?
Yes, you used to have a counter. Mm. Yes, that's right. Mm. And then, of course, everybody used to come in. They were all more or less suffragettes who came in, naturally.
Mm.
And it was all done in Stratford, you see, and the West Ham board and that.
Mm. Well, was it the Romford branch, Romford Road branch then of the...
I don't know what they called it, but the shop was in Romford Road. It was 32B, and it was a lock-up shop. It was just a little place that I suppose it was let off to us.
So it was just a sort of place where they raised money.
That's it.
Where they sold papers.
Yes, and where they could meet, sort of, headquarters.
Yes,
that's
see.
What it must have been.
Yes. So anyway, what did people say when you started getting mixed up with these people?
But my people?
Yes.
Well, you see, we've gotten out of East Ham in this little house, and of course everything was going on. My father was getting more subdued. His children were growing up, you see, and his youngest daughter, instead of biting his backside, took bigger things than that, you see, and he did calm down very much. In fact, I began to realise that... I'd got a father, so to speak, do you know what I mean? And I used to think, you're your biggest enemy. You're misunderstood.
Mm.
You do everything that's against yourself.
Mm.
And he seemed to begin to take interest more in me more, you see.
Mm. When you got older.
Yes. Mm. But he didn't have the chance. Mm. Because do you remember the Silvertown Brunnermans explosion?
Oh, I think I've heard of it, yes.
We were in that, because our house at East Ham was practically... opposite Silvertown, and my father was upstairs in bed, and he was very, very ill. He had consumption of the throat, and a consumption of the lungs, and an obstruction in the throttle, which I suppose was a growth, you think. Well, he was upstairs in bed, and this terrible explosion came, and my mother and I were sitting down in the dining room, or the sitting room. And the fire blew right out. And my father, as soon as he was, got up, put his trousers on, came down the stairs and went to the gate.
Mm.
And then he went upstairs, and in the night, he got out of bed, and my mother called me and said, try and come and get your father back. And together we managed to get him back, because he was absolutely wasted away, you see. And then I went to the office. I was at the Eastern District office in Whitechapel Road. And they rang up to say, Auntie rang up to say, your father's passed away the next day. So I was back, this shock that did that, you see.
Mm.
But
So it had to happen, didn't it?
It had to happen.
Yeah, the energy and the and your interest in
life. That's right, yes, that's right.
Yes. What sort of politics did he have, and was he liberal or conservative?
I don't think he was anything.
I see.
Mm. It took him all his time to get his living. See what I mean?
Yes.
It did in those days.
Yes.
And you see, that's the trouble. The Boilermakers, they were a bad lot.
Mm.
They were a rough type thing.
Mm.
And of course, what did they have? They had no television. Mm. They had no pleasures. Mm. Except to have a drink when they got their pay coming out at the local.
Your aunt now. Your aunt was teaching just as an ordinary general teacher, was she, in a school?
Pupil teacher in the church school.
In the Isle of Dogs, is this? Or
no,
where?
Barkin Road.
I see.
And then when she qualified, she went there to a school, I forget the name of the school now, in a custom house.
Mm.
And it was one of those three-story schools, you know, awful. And it was the biggest slum. It's where the children used to go to school without any shoes and stockings on.
Again, in the East End, this is it?
Yes, this is Custom House.
Mm.
Yes.
Yes.
And mothers used to sew their children up for the winter.
Mm.
Wrap all olive oil in them, sew them up in flannel round, you see. Because my aunt always said, you know, they got to smell, and one of the children smelt so much, she sent a note home to the mother, "Would you please give Jimmy a bath, he smells." And the irate mother came up to him and she said, "What do you mean, my Jimmy smells? He ain't no blooming rose. You're there to larn him, not smell him."
So what did they do when you say sew them up? Why did they sew them up?
Keep them warm, then got another clothes on them. And they got no clothes to keep putting them into.
Mm.
Oh, they're in rags.
So what did they do? They
Well, suppose now for father had a shirt, and that got worn out. Or they a flannel shirt. See, they used to wear these flannel shirts. Well, they cut off the vest, and then they'd put the holes in the thing there, put the kids in there like a kind of vest, and sew them up for the winter. Oil them off, see, sew them up for the winter.
Why did they oil them, though? I mean,
in those days you used to oil people. I remember being, when I used to have a cold, mother used to rub camphorated oil in or something, that sort of thing on your chest.
You keep this clothing on all the winter?
Kept it on all the winter, one temperature. You
day and night?
Yes, yes, I've sewn up. Because they wanted they wanted something, before the doctors came examining, you know, but there was something happened, and my aunt wrote home to one of the mothers. She said, "We can't do that because we've sewn him up for the winter."
Good Lord, that really does take you back.
I mean, you wouldn't believe it, would you?
Yeah. I hope they didn't sew up the bottom half too.
Yes, I hope not.
She went to this school.
Yes.
And then she went to Southend, you say?
No, she never went to Southend.
Oh, I see.
She got a headship.
Mm.
And she went to a secondary school, Hallsville Girls' School, where she stayed many years and retired from there.
I see. So she went to two schools before she became a head.
Yes, that's right.
Mm. So she was really well paid, I think, as a head, by women's standards.
By women's standards she was, yes. And of course, then that's when we went to East Ham, she got this little house for us. Mm. Well, then, of course, when my father died, we had no money. Mother had an insurance policy, and that buried him.
Mm.
And of course, there was the mortgage, and of course, we couldn't keep it up, and the house was sold. And I was at the Eastern District Office at the time. I'd gone up there as a skilled telegraphist, because that's how I'd got on, you see. And there was a man there took a great interest in me, and he said, when they rang up and said my father had died, he said, "Well, you can go home if you like," but he said, "I wouldn't go either." He said, "Your mother's all right." He said, "I've spoken to your aunt on the phone, and they're all right. Stay and work the time out." And he said, "Come in tomorrow. You can't do any good. Come in tomorrow. Come in," he said, "have the day off for the funeral, but come in every day," he said.
Yes, your aunt actually put up the money for
it
a sub-post office?
Sub-post office.
So your mother was nominal.
My mother, she only had to be the sub-post mistress.
You did the work, and your aunt put up the money.
That's right, yes.
So all the women really worked together, didn't they?
So auntie said, "Well, now I'll come up too, and I'll have a bedroom up there, and I'll stay with you, and I'll pay you so much a week, towards me keep and everything, until you fill your feet." Well, as I told you in my letter, my sister had qualified, you see, come out very high in the civil service exam.
Mm.
And My aunt had put the money up. We're all living now, left, you see. And then we managed to, well, of course, we worked all our son and the son, mother and I.
Your aunt was looking after her parents all this time?
No, they were dead.
Oh, they were dead by then. This is 1917, isn't it? Yes. Yes, I see.
Mm. And she was still going strong with George Lansbury and that crowd and the mines and all that. Oh, yes.
Mm.
And then we managed to, mother and I, we managed to pay the money back. And we gave Auntie what she'd have had in interest in the savings bank, you see.
Did you?
Yes. Mm. Well, we cleared that up and then we started and we said, now, well, we'll save up now till we can buy a house of our own. Well, we did, we saved up. And my sister was furious because she said, I work in the money order department, I come home, I don't want post offices. So she turned after and went and got a flat of her own in Bethnal Green. She went with all the other elite in Bethnal Green, you know, with Sir Wyndham Deeds' mother and Lady Wyndham Deeds and all that crowd.
Mm.
And the Oxford House people who were social workers, she went over with that crowd. Anyway, we stayed in the office. Well, then one day, I said to my mother, we could buy a house now. So mother said, yes, we could, couldn't we? Suppose we buy a house, what do we eat? It was a burning question, wasn't it? You see?
18 years in that post office.
Yes, but the adventure...
So it was your sister
who
said
sister.
That?
Oh,
I
yeah.
see,
no,
sorry, I was going
no.
to...
My aunt said, well, you're on your feet now, Carr.
Yes.
My mother's name was Gerard.
So she went off.
I want to go back to, you see, and she went into rooms somewhere and... It's too long a story to tell you everything.
Yes,
you know
of
I mean?
Course.
Yes.
So anyway, your aunt really sets you up, really, doesn't she?
Oh, she did all through life she has, yes. Mm.
So did that mean that you had great admiration for your aunt? I mean, she a great influence on you, you personally, do you think?
Yes, I think she was. Yes, she was. I'll tell you why. Because if ever I was naughty or did anything, she used to say, I'll tell your aunt, Mum, they used to say, I'll tell your aunt Em about it.
Mm.
I'll tell your Aunt Em about that.
Mm. You thought highly of her.
Oh, yes. Mm. She was put on a pedestal by us, you see.
Mm.
Which we thought when we grew up was wrong, you see.
Mm.
Because we found that she'd got clay feet like other people.
Well, what sort of clay feet? I mean, it doesn't sound as if she had any clay feet to me, from what you're saying. I mean, she's...
No, well, she had a... Yes, she was. But, I mean, she had her, you know... She wanted to live everybody's life for them.
Mm, you mean she was a manager,
yes.
rather?
That's what I mean, yes.
Mm.
She is always, we've got to ask Aunt Em, Auntie Emma, you see. Mm. Why? Because Auntie Emma was the fountain of everything, you see what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, I see. Well, of course, she was a very successful
she
woman.
She was, of course,
she?
Yes.
Mm. Was she a good headmistress, do you think?
Oh, I think she was, yes. Mm.
Mm. So she's a success very much in that part
she
of
was.
Her life.
She was, yes.
Mm. Mm. What about politics? I mean, she was a Labour voter, I suppose.
Oh, dead Labour. If ever we used to have people here later on in life, we'd say, for God's sake, don't start politics. And don't mention Labour, for goodness sake. She'd end up in an argument and a row. Yes, because she'd get so heated about it, you see. Oh, yes.
What sort of things was she heated about? I mean, when people were attacking Labour, she'd get...
Yes, because Labour was a... And you should say, why should they... Why should they have fair shares for all, equal power? Why should they have this, that and the other? Why shouldn't it be divided up between people?
Mm.
And one day I took her out in the car and I said to her, oh, look at that lovely estate, Auntie, for those lodge gates and that, pulling it down. Why shouldn't they pull it down? Why shouldn't they pull it down? She said they're going to put a council's estate up there. I said, yes, I know, my God. So she said, that's right. A bit for everybody. Everybody can have. Why should one man have all that?
Mm.
I said, Auntie, by the time that's all divided up, if they're going to have you, let you have your bit of it as well, there'll be just about as much room for you to put your two feet down.
What other things did she do? Was she a pacifist at all, or in the peace movement, or
no? She wasn't any of
that. No, she actually painted in her spare time.
Yes.
She?
Yes. And she was good at ice tea.
Did she really?
Oh, yes. That's a bit more of her work.
Embroidery?
No, pen painting.
Oh, yes. Beautiful, yes.
That's why I think you've been in this world before. I'm certain of it.
Mm.
She was just born into that. She was religious. Oh, yes, she was religious.
Mm. Was she?
Yes. Oh, yes. She
what
used to go
sort?
To church.
I mean, Anglican?
Church of England.
Was she?
Yes.
Yeah.
She used to go to Stratford Church. I don't know which one, but she paid for pew and everything.
Did
oh,
she?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Mm.
And, of course, my people, my mother and father married in church. All our people were. And they used to go. We were all baptised.
Were you?
Oh, yes. Mm. We were confirmed.
Mm. So you were quite a religious family, really.
Yes.
Mm.
And my mother was churched. You know, used to go to, when after the babies were born, they used to go to church in, the church in the mothers. They don't do that these days, you see. They have a party at home.
Mm. Mm. So that was quite a large part of your life, religious life.
Oh, yes,
then, anyway.
Yes. Mm. It is now.
Mm.
Oh, yes.
Mm. What about women's organisations? Did your aunt join any women's organisations?
No.
Much?
No, except the... as I say, National Union of Teachers.
Yes, I see.
She was very active in that.
Was she?
Oh, very, yeah. She's got to the conferences.
Yes, you said that she came back from a conference to vote in 1918.
Yes, she
was
got
that?
The vote, you see.
Yeah.
And they had to go away on a conference.
That was National Union of Teachers conference.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
And of course, they're all suffragettes and all of them out there, see. And she said to my mother, I should be home on such and such, I'm coming home to vote. And my mother thought she was crazy. I, of course, remember my aunt saying, look here, I fought for this vote, and I'm going to use it.
So she came back from the conference?
She came back, did her vote, went back to the conference.
Mm.
Twice she came home from the conference.
Mm.
She came home on another time because at 20 to 12, one night, Easter time, I was taken out on a stretcher to the London Hospital, very ill, and I was operated on. I had perforated appendix, abscess, gangrene of intestines and peritonitis, and it was, they said I would never recover from it. I was in a sub-office at the time, and there was a sub-postmaster and his wife, you see, and of course when they knew I was going to go around carrying a banner, they said, well, I'm sorry for you, because you don't know what you're doing. You're only being misled by these older people.
Well, there were lots of young people in the women's...
Oh, yes, of course there were. Well, I couldn't have been much younger, could I?
You didn't speak yourself, I suppose.
Oh,
did
no,
you?
No,
you were too
no,
young,
really. No, I was too young.
Did your aunt speak?
I can't remember, or possibly she did.
Mm.
Yes.
I suppose as a teacher, she had to be careful.
Yeah,
anyway,
that's right, yes. Mm.
She had to. She couldn't really be too...
I know
calm.
We were mobbed one night.
Were you really?
Yes, and carrying our banners, and it was just at Stratford Broadway, and the stuff shop was just along the road, but we couldn't get to because of all the people. But we got a tram, and the man helped us, the tram, he's gone upstairs, upstairs, and I remember Mrs. Pankhurst going up, and us following with the banners. We got up, and we said, where are we going? So he said, oh, down my way you're going. He said, I'll put you down later on. There's a tram car. And when we got a little way further on, he stopped and we all got off again. See, but we got out of the way of them off, because you don't know what people can do in these days, you see, because they're very hostile to women, you know, and the women's movement.
Is what sort of people were mobbing you then? Were
well,
they
the
boys
people,
or
all general
men,
public.
Or?
No, general public. You know, people have been, like the Abbot Spinker's Corner, you know, you get a crowd of mixed people.
Yes, yes. Yes. You met some suffragettes.
Yes.
In the women's, what's it, Women's Freemasons,
yes.
Called, is it? Who were they then? 1908?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we started, first of all.
The Honourable Fraternity of Ancient Masons.
And then after that, that's Women in Freemasonry.
Oh, yes.
And then this is...
How do you bring the two together?
She cultivated that.
I see.
Yes, she cultivated that.
I see, yes. You mean she laid it on?
Yes, that's right, yes.
To get her way?
Yes. Oh, yes. Because my sister and I used to say, she's putting the job on again.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
So she was a very dominant person, but
she was. Oh, yes.
She could disguise
it. Oh,
yes,
yes.
Yes, I see. Yes.
You see, now, I'm different.
Would you bring out, if you wanted to describe what sort of person she was? She was a very determined person.
She was determined.
Very active, always doing things.
Oh, yes, she was very active, always.
Helping people.
Yeah, oh, yes. She was all the family, no matter which they were, who they were, she put many of them on their feet.
Mm.
And as I said, that when I left the post office, in recognition of my services, they said they would take me back with my service, you see, although I was over the age.
Mm.
But I'd have to pass an examination.
Mm.
And she coached me. Mm. We both nearly had a breakdown over it.
Mm.
And I had to go to Burlington House and sit for the exam. And I passed, and she said to me, however you pass that examination, I don't know. We both nearly had a breakdown over it. I said, yes, but Auntie, I said, they told them out to history. And I said, I'm told them so much in history, I said, that they never heard of before, and they've got time to look it up, so they passed me.
Personally, did you think? Why was that,
yes.
You think?
I don't know.
I mean, she really did look after you, didn't
she? Oh, she did, yes.
So you looked after her, of course, and the other end of her life.
Yes, and when she wanted to sort of get rid of anything, but we used to say she wants to get rid of, good job she's got some relations to dump it all onto, you know.
Mm.
She'd give it to me. Mm. And that piano in there is 100 years old, got white ivory keys and everything.
Mm.
She gave me that, you see.
Mm.
And lots of things, it would be, would you like that, Eva, you see. And she'd give it to me.
Mm. So she was fond of you?
She must have been, yes. Mm. Mm. And of course, you see, well, she was fond of me because I stuck to my mother, so.
Yes.
And my mother was her sister, you see.
Yes.
And they'd been through a lot together.
Yes.
And I think it's why, whereas my sister, well, she was all for herself, you see. I'm all right, Jack. And.
Mm. But was your aunt anti-man, do you think, or anti-men?
No, I don't think so.
Because she'd seen your father, of course,
yes, as well. And she did have friends who was belonged to a cycling club, George Bell, and his wife. They were married, and one or two other people.
Mm.
And she did have I think they had a lodger at one time. I don't remember him being a lodger, but I know he used to bring us lovely £7 boxes of those Maynard's assorted sweets, you know, where they done up like some old strawberries, a row of strawberries and a row of something else, a row of creams.
I know, yeah.
And he took us out one night, I don't know where he took us. But
when she retired, did she go into an old people's
home? Oh, no. What happened when she retired? Now, wait a minute, where did she go first of all? When we moved to North London and came up here when we retired.
That's you and your mother, is it?
Yes.
Not? Yes.
Auntie came too, but
did
not
she?
Here.
Mm.
She took a little flat in Arnos Grove Court.
Mm.
And she stayed there from when we retired, when we came up here, which was in 1935. She stayed there until she moved over to Penge. She was 85.
I see, yes.
Yes. And she retired when she was 60. So she was there about 20 years, I know. She was there all during the war.
And then in Penge, she was in this nursing home from
age. No, you see, a friend of mine, a Mrs. Swash,
mm.
she used to open up homes for elderly people.
Mm.
And she bought some property at in Penge, East Penge.
Mm.
And she was going to open up these homes, but for nursing homes and that.
Mm.
I can't go into that what they were like because it'd take too long.
Mm.
And they weren't going to be cheap. They were going to be 10 guineas a week, you see. But everything found, and it was going to be a warden and this, that and the other. And my aunt, she was one of the first people to go in it.
I see. She had a very lively old age,
you'd say. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And she went one day and she came home on the bus and the busman said, now, my dear, you oughtn't to be out. She said, I'm all right. So he said, well, where are you going? She said, I'm going across there. He stopped the bus and he took it across, the conductor. He was so concerned about her, you see. But she wasn't, she wasn't feeble.
No.
Oh, no.
Mm. Was she interested in things? I mean, did she read a lot or talk a lot? I mean,
she read a lot and she lived the lives of the people in the book.
Mm. Did she?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Yes.
So she was, who were they? Yes. There were two women you met.
Yes, two women. One was a Miss De Pass, who was very well off.
Mm.
And she was elderly. Of course, she was elderly, actually. And she had a companion who was, his name go from you, Miss De Pass and
anyway, they were ex-suffragettes, were they?
They were ex-suffragettes, and Mr. Pass had been in Holloway Prison and had been forcibly fed. Although she didn't talk about it, she didn't talk about the movement for England, which was there. Well, then we owned a home at Worthing. We got an in-house home there.
Sure, that sort of thing.
We bought a little plot of ground at Maylandsea. Do you know Maylandsea, when I came home from the army? Near Malden.
Oh, yes, yes.
And it's a yachting place.
Yes.
It's now known as the Millionaire's Playground because it's, you know.
Mm.
And she used to come down to see, down to the little plot. And when we got down there one day, someone came out and said, "Oh, Miss Summers, it's governess." And it was a couple of her people. Mm. And now you could tell by, you know, the way they, it wasn't, "Oh, it's Miss Summers, you know, governess and that."
They really liked her.
Oh, yes. Mm. Everybody liked her. Yes.
Mm. Yes.